doubt, wasn't himself at all. He had tried to turn himself over to the Clave, and she hadn't let him. She hadn't listened to what he'd wanted. She had made the choice for him. In a moment of flight and panic, but she had made it, not realizing that her Jace would rather die than be like this, and that she'd been not so much saving his life as damning him to an existence he would despise. She sagged against him, and Jace, taking her sudden shift as an indicator that she wasn't fighting him anymore, loosened his grip on her. The last of the Shadow Hunters was in front of Sebastian, reaching eagerly for the infernal cup as he held it out. "Clary," Jace began. She never found out what he would have said. There was a cry, and the Shadow Hunter reaching for the cup staggered back, an arrow in his throat. In disbelief, Clary whipped her head around and saw, standing on top of the stone dolmen, Alec, and Gear, holding his bow. He grinned in satisfaction and reached back over his shoulder for another arrow. And then, coming from behind him, the rest of them poured out onto the plain. A pack of wolves, running low to the ground, their brindled fur shining in the variegated light. Maya and Jordan were among them, she guessed. Behind them walked familiar Shadow Hunters in an unbroken line. Isabel and Maris Lightwood, Helen Blackthorn and Aline Penhallow, and Jocelyn, her red hair visible even at a distance. With them was Simon, the hilt of a silver sword protruding over the curve of his shoulder, and Magnus, hands crackling with blue fire. Her heart leaped in her chest.
"I'm here!" she called out to them. "I'm here!"
"Can you see her?" Jocelyn demanded. "Is she there?" Simon tried to focus on the milling darkness ahead of him, his vampire senses sharpening at the distinct scent of blood. Different kinds of blood, mixing together. Shadowhunter blood, demon blood, and the bitterness of Sebastian's blood. "I can see her," he said. "Jace has hold of her. He's pulling her behind the line of Shadowhunters there. If they're loyal to Jonathan like the Circle was to Valentine, they'll make a wall of bodies to protect him, and Clary and Jace along with him." Jocelyn was all cold maternal fury, her green eyes burning. "We're going to have to break through it to get to them." "What we need to get to is Sebastian," said Isabel. "Simon, we'll hack a path for you. You get to Sebastian and run him through with Glorious. Once he falls..." "The others will probably scatter," said Magnus. "Or depending on how tied they are to Sebastian, they might die or collapse along with him. We can hope, at least." He craned his head back. "Speaking of hope, did you see that shot Alec got off with his bow?
That's my boyfriend."
He beamed and wiggled his fingers, blue sparks shot from them. He shone all over. Only Magnus, Simon thought resignedly, would have access to sequined battle armor. Isabel uncurled her whip from around her wrist. It shot out in front of her, a lick of golden fire. "Okay, Simon," she said. "Are you ready?" Simon's shoulders tightened. They were still some distance from the line of the opposing army. He didn't know how else to think of them, who were holding their line in their red robes and gear, their hands bristling with weapons. Some of them were exclaiming out loud in confusion. He couldn't hold back a grin. "Name of the angel, Simon," said Izzy. "What's there to smile about?" "Their seraph blades don't work anymore," said Simon. "They're trying to figure out why. Sebastian just shouted at them to use other weapons." A cry came up from the line as another arrow swooped down from the tomb and buried itself in the back of a burly red-robed Shadow Hunter who collapsed forward. The line jerked and opened slightly, like a fracture in a wall. Simon, seeing his chance, dashed forward, and the others rushed with him. It was like diving into a black ocean at night, an ocean filled with sharks and viciously toothed sea creatures colliding against one another. It was not the first battle Simon had ever been in, but during the Mortal War, he had been newly marked with the Mark of Cain. It hadn't quite begun working yet, though many demons had reeled back upon seeing it. He had never thought he would miss it, but he missed it now, as he tried to shove forward through the tightly packed shadow hunters who hacked at him with blades. Isabel was on one side of him, Magnus on the other, protecting him, protecting Glorious. Isabel's whip sang out strong and sure, and Magnus's hands spat fire, red and green and blue. Lashes of colored fire struck the dark Nephilim, burning them where they stood. Other shadow hunters screamed as Luke's wolves slunk among them, nipping and biting, leaping for their throats. A dagger shot out with astonishing speed and sliced at Simon's side. He cried out, but kept going, knowing the wound would knit itself together in seconds. He pushed forward and froze. A familiar face was before him. Luke's sister, Amadis. As her eyes settled on him, he saw the recognition in them. What was she doing here? Had she come to fight alongside them? But she lunged at him, a darkly gleaming dagger in her hand. She was fast, but not so fast that his vampire reflexes couldn't have saved him if he hadn't been too astonished to move. Amadis was Luke's sister. He knew her. And that moment of disbelief might have been the end of him if Magnus hadn't jumped in front of him, shoving him backward. Blue fire shot from Magnus's hand, but Amadis was faster than the warlock, too. She spun away from the blaze and under Magnus's arm, and Simon caught the flash of moonlight off the blade of her knife. Magnus's eyes widened in shock as her midnight-colored blade drove downward, slicing through his armor. She jerked it back, the blade now slick with reflective blood. Isabel screamed as Magnus collapsed to his knees. Simon tried to turn toward him, but the surge and pressure of the fighting crowd was carrying him away. He cried out Magnus's name as Amadis bent over the fallen warlock and raised the dagger a second time, aiming for his heart. "Let go of me!" Clary shouted, writhing and kicking as she did her best to wrench herself out of Jace's grip. She could see almost nothing above the surging crowd of red-clad shadow hunters that stood in front of her, Jace and Sebastian, blocking her family and friends. The three of them were a few feet behind the line of battle. Jace was holding her tightly as she struggled, and Sebastian, to the side of them, was watching events unfold with a look of dark fury on his face. His lips were moving. She couldn't tell if he was swearing, praying, or chanting the words of a spell. "Let go of me, you!" Sebastian turned, a frightening expression on his face, somewhere between a grin and a snarl. "Shut her up, Jace." Jace, still gripping Clary, said, "Are we just going to stand back here and let them protect us?" He jerked his chin toward the line of shadow hunters. "Yes," Sebastian said. "We are too important to risk getting hurt, you and I." Jace shook his head. "I don't like it. There are too many on the other side." He craned his neck to look over the crowd. "What about Lilith? Can you summon her back? Have her help us?" "What, right here?" There was contempt in Sebastian's tone. "No. Besides, she's too weak now to be of much help. Once she could have smote down an army, but that piece of scum Downworlder with the mark of Cain scattered her essence through the voids between the worlds. It was all she could do to appear and give us her blood." "Coward!" Clary spat at him. "You turned all these people into your slaves, and you won't even fight to protect them." Sebastian raised his hand as if he meant to backhand her across the face. Clary wished he would, wished Jace would be there to see it happen when he did. But a smirk flashed across Sebastian's mouth instead. He lowered his hand. "And if Jace let you go, I suppose you'd fight?" "Of course I would." "On what side?" Sebastian took a quick step toward her, raising the infernal cup. She could see what was inside it. Though many had drunk from it, the blood had remained at the same level. "Lift your head up, Jace." "No!" She redoubled her efforts to get away. Jace's hand slipped beneath her chin, but she thought she felt hesitation in his touch. "Sebastian," he said. "Not now," Sebastian said. There's no need for us to remain here. We are the important ones, not these cannon fodder. We've proved the Infernal Cup works. That's what matters. He sees the front of Clary's dress. But it will be much easier to escape, he said, without this one kicking and screaming and punching every step of the way. We can make her drink later. No, Sebastian snarled. Hold her still. And he raised the cup and jammed it against Clary's lips, trying to pry open her mouth. She fought him, gritting her teeth. Drink, Sebastian said in a vicious whisper, so low she doubted Jace could hear it. I told you by the end of this night you would do whatever I wanted. Drink. His black eyes darkened, and he dug the cup in, slicing her bottom lip. She tasted blood as she reached behind her, grabbing Jace's shoulder, using his body to push off against as she kicked out with her legs. She felt the seam rip on her dress as it split up the side and her feet slammed solidly against Sebastian's ribcage. He staggered back, with the wind knocked out of him, just as she jerked her head back, hearing the solid crack as her skull connected with Jace's face. He yelled and loosened his grip on her enough for her to tear free. She ripped away from him and plunged into the battle without looking back. Maya raced along the rocky ground, starlight raking its cool fingers through her coat, the strong sense of battle assailing her sensitive nose. Blood, sweat, and the burned rubber stench of dark magic. The pack had spread out widely over the field, leaping and killing with deadly teeth and claws. Maya kept close to Jordan's side, not because she needed his protection, but because she had discovered that side by side, they fought better and more effectively. She had been in only one battle before, on Brosselin Plain, and that had been a chaotic whirl of demons and downworlders. There were many fewer combatants here on the Burren, but the Dark Shadow Hunters were formidable, swinging their swords and daggers with a swift, frightening force. Maya had seen one slender man use a short-bladed dagger to whip the head off a wolf who'd been in mid-leap. What had collapsed to the ground was a headless human body, bloody and unrecognizable. Even as she thought it, one of the scarlet-robed Nephilim loomed up in front of them, a double-edged sword gripped in his hands. The blade was stained with red-black under the moonlight. Jordan, beside Maya, snarled, but she was the one who launched herself at the man. He ducked away, slashing out his sword. She felt a sharp pain in her shoulder and hit the ground on all four paws, pain stabbing through her. There was a clatter, and she knew she had knocked the man's sword from his hand. She growled in satisfaction and spun around, but Jordan was already leaping for the Nephilim's throat. And the man caught him by the neck, out of the air, as if he were catching hold of a rebellious puppy. "Downworlder scum!" he spat. And though it wasn't the first time Maya had heard such insults, something about the icy hatred of his tone made her shudder. "You should be a coat. I should be wearing you." Maya sank her teeth into his leg. Coppery blood exploded into her mouth as the man shouted in pain and staggered back, kicking at her, his hold on Jordan slipping. Maya gripped him tight as Jordan lunged again, and this time the Shadow Hunter's shout of rage was cut short as the werewolf's claws tore his throat open. Amadeus drove the knife toward Magnus's heart, just as an arrow whistled through the air and thumped into her shoulder, knocking her aside with such force that she spun halfway around and fell face forward to the rocky ground. She was screaming, a noise quickly drowned out by the clash of weapons all around them. Isabel knelt down by Magnus's side. Simon, glancing up, saw Alec on the stone tomb, standing frozen with the bow in his hands. He was probably too far away to see Magnus clearly. Isabel had her hands against the warlock's chest, but Magnus, who was always so kinetic, so bursting with energy, was utterly still under Isabel's ministrations. She looked up and saw Simon staring at them. Her hands were red with blood, but she shook her head at him violently. "Keep going!" she shouted. "Find Sebastian!" With a wrench, Simon turned himself around and plunged back into the battle. The tight line of red-clad shadow hunters had started to come undone. The wolves were darting here and there, herding the shadow hunters away from one another. Jocelyn was sword to sword with a snarling man whose free arm dripped blood, and Simon realized something bizarre as he staggered forward, pushing his way through the narrow gaps between skirmishes. None of the red-clad Nephilim were marked. Their skin was bare of decoration. They were also, he realized, seeing out of the corner of his eye one of the enemy shadow hunters lunging for Aline with a swinging mace, only to be gutted by Helen, darting in from the side, much faster than any Nephilim he had seen before, other than Jace and Sebastian. They moved with the swiftness of vampires, he thought, as one of them slashed at a leaping wolf, slitting its belly open. The dead werewolf crashed to the ground, now the corpse of a stocky man with curling fair hair. Not Maya or Jordan. Relief swamped him, and then guilt. He staggered forward, the smell of blood thick around him, and again he missed the mark of Cain. If he had still borne it, he thought, he could have burned all these enemy Nephilim to the ground where they stood. One of the dark Nephilim rose up in front of him, swinging a single-edged broadsword. Simon ducked, but he didn't need to. The man was barely halfway through the swing when an arrow caught him in the neck and he went down, gurgling blood. Simon's head jerked up, and he saw Alec, still atop the tomb. His face was a stony mask, and he was firing off arrows with machine-like precision, his hand reaching back mechanically to grasp one, fit it to the bow, and let fly. Each one stuck a target, but Alec barely seemed to notice. By the time the arrow was flying, he was reaching for another one. Simon heard another one whistle by him and slam into a body as he darted forward, making for a cleared section of the battlefield. He froze. There she was, Clary, a tiny figure fighting her way through the crowd barehanded, kicking and pushing to get past. She wore a torn red dress, and her hair was a tangled mass, and when she saw him, a look of incredulous amazement crossed her face. Her lips shaped his name. Just behind her was Jace. His face was bloody. The crowd parted as he plunged through it, letting him by. Behind him, in the gap left by his passing, Simon could see a shimmer of red and silver, a familiar figure, topped now with white gilt hair like Valentine's. Sebastian, still hiding behind the last line of defense of Dark Shadow Hunters. Seeing him, Simon reached over his shoulder and hauled Glorious from its sheath. A moment later, a surge in the crowd hurled Clary toward him. Her eyes were nearly black with adrenaline, but her joy at seeing him was plain. Relief spilled through Simon, and he realized he'd been wondering if she was still herself or changed, as Amadis had been. "Give me the sword!" she cried, her voice almost drowned out by the clang of metal on metal. She thrust her arm forward to take it, and in that moment she was no longer Clary, his friend since childhood, but a shadow hunter, an avenging angel who belonged with that sword in her hand. He held it out to her, hilt first. Battle was like a whirlpool, Jocelyn thought, cutting her way through the pressing crowd, slashing out with Luke's kindle at any spot of red that she saw. Things came at you and then surged away so quickly that all one was really aware of was a sense of uncontrollable danger, the struggle to stay alive and not drown. Her eyes flicked frantically through the mass of fighters, searching for her daughter, for a glimpse of red hair, or even for a sight of Jace, because where he was, Clary would be too. There were boulders strewn across the plain, like icebergs in an unmoving sea. She scrambled up the rough edge of one, trying to get a better view of the battlefield. But she could make out only close-pressed bodies, the flash of weapons, and the dark, low-running shapes of wolves among the fighters. She turned to scramble back down the boulder, only to find someone waiting for her at the bottom. Jocelyn came up short, staring. He wore scarlet robes, and there was a livid scar along one of his cheeks, a relic of some battle unknown to her. His face was pinched and no longer young, but there was no mistaking him. "Jeremy," she said slowly, her voice barely audible over the clamor of the fighting. "Jeremy Pontmercy." The man who had once been the youngest member of the circle looked at her out of bloodshot eyes. "Jocelyn Morgenstern, have you come to join us?" "Join you? Jeremy, no." "You were in the circle once," he said, stepping closer to her. A long dagger with an edge like a straight razor hung from his right hand. "You were one of us, and now we follow your son." "I broke with you when you followed my husband," said Jocelyn. "Why do you think I'd follow you now that my son leads you?" "Either you stand with us or against us, Jocelyn." His face hardened. "You cannot stand against your own son." "Jonathan," she said softly. "He is the greatest evil Valentine ever committed. I could never stand with him. In the end, I never stood with Valentine. So what hope do you have of convincing me now?" He shook his head. "You misunderstand me," he said. "I mean you cannot stand against him. Against us. The Clave cannot. They are not prepared. Not for what we can do, are willing to do. Blood will run in the streets of every city. The world will burn. Everything you know will be destroyed. And we will rise from the ashes of your defeat, the Phoenix triumphant. This is your only chance. I doubt your son will give you another." "Jeremy," she said, "you were so young when Valentine recruited you. You could come back even to the Clave. They would be lenient." "I can never come back to the Clave," he said with a hard satisfaction. "Don't you understand? Those of us who stand with your son, we are Nephilim no longer." "Nephilim no longer?" Jocelyn began to reply, but before she could speak, blood burst from his mouth. He crumpled, and as he did, Jocelyn saw, standing behind him bearing a broad sword, Maris. The two women looked at each other for a moment over Jeremy's body. Then Maris turned and walked back toward the battle. The moment Clary's fingers closed around the hilt, the sword exploded with a golden light. Fire blazed down the blade from the tip, illuminating words carved blackly into the side. "Quis aut Deus?" and making the hilt shine as if it contained the light of the sun. She nearly dropped it, thinking it had caught on fire. But the flame seemed contained inside the sword, and the metal was cool beneath her palms. Everything after that seemed to happen very slowly. She turned, the sword blazing in her grip. Her eyes searched the crowd desperately for Sebastian. She couldn't see him, but she knew he was behind the tight knot of shadowhunters she had punched through to get here. Gripping the sword, she moved toward them, only to find her way blocked by Jace. "Clary," he said. It seemed impossible that she could hear him. The sounds around them were deafening, screams and growls, the clatter of metal on metal. But the sea of fighting figures seemed to have fallen away from them on either side like the Red Sea parting, leaving a clear space around her and Jace. The sword burned, slippery in her grip. "Jace, get out of the way!" She heard Simon, behind her, shout something. Jace was shaking his head. His golden eyes were flat, unreadable. His face was bloody. She had cracked her head against his cheekbone, and the skin was swelling and darkening. "Give me the sword, Clary." "No." She shook her head, backing up a step. Glorious lit the space they stood in, lit the trampled, blood-smeared grass around her, and lit Jace as he moved toward her. "Jace, I can separate you from Sebastian. I can kill him without hurting you." His face twisted. His eyes were the same color as the fire in the sword, or they were reflecting it back. She wasn't sure which. And as she looked at him, she realized it didn't matter. She was seeing Jace and not Jace. Her memories of him. The beautiful boy she'd met first, reckless with himself and others. Learning to care and be careful. She remembered the night they'd spent together in Idris, holding hands across the narrow bed, and the blood-stained boy who had looked at her with haunted eyes and confessed to being a murderer in Paris.
Kill him? Jace, who wasn't Jace, demanded now. Are you out of your mind?
And she remembered that night by Lake Lynn, Valentine driving the sword into him, and the way her own life had seemed to bleed out with his blood. She had watched him die, there on the beach in Idris. And afterward, when she had brought him back, he had crawled to her and looked down at her with those eyes that burned like the sword, like the incandescent blood of an angel.
"I was in the dark," he had said. "There was nothing there but shadows, and I was a shadow. And then I heard your voice."
But that voice blurred into another, more recent one. Jace, facing down Sebastian in the living room of Valentine's apartment, telling her that he would rather die than live like this. She could hear him now, speaking, telling her to give him the sword, that if she didn't, he would take it from her. His voice was harsh, impatient, the voice of someone talking to a child. And she knew, in that moment, that just as he wasn't Jace, the Clary he loved wasn't her. It was a memory of her, blurred and distorted, the image of someone docile, obedient. Someone who didn't understand that love given without free will or truthfulness wasn't love at all. "Give me the sword." His hand was out, his chin raised, his tone imperious. "Give it to me, Clary. You want it?" She raised Glorious, the way he had taught her to, balancing the weight of it, though it felt heavy in her hand. The flame in it grew brighter, until it seemed to reach upward and touch the stars. Jace was only the sword's length away from her, his golden eyes incredulous. Even now, he couldn't believe she might hurt him, really hurt him. Even now. She took a deep breath. "Take it." She saw his eyes blaze up the way they had that day by the lake. And then she drove the sword into him, just as Valentine had done. She understood now that this was the way it had to be. He had died like this, and she had ripped him back from death. And now it had come again. "You cannot cheat death. In the end, it will have its own." Gloria sank into his chest, and she felt her bloody hand slide on the hilt as the blade ground against the bones of his ribcage, driving through him until her fist thumped against his body, and she froze. He hadn't moved, and she was pressed up against him now, gripping Glorious as blood began to spill from the wound in his chest. There was a scream, a sound of rage and pain and terror, the sound of someone being brutally torn apart. "Sebastian," Clary thought. Sebastian, screaming as his bond with Jace was severed. But Jace didn't make a sound. Despite everything, his face was calm and peaceful, the face of a statue. He looked down at Clary, and his eyes shone, as if he were filling with light. And then he began to burn. Alec didn't remember scrambling down from the top of the stone tomb, or pushing his way across the stony plain among the litter of fallen bodies. Dark shadow hunters, dead and wounded werewolves. His eyes were seeking out only one person. He stumbled and nearly fell. When he looked up, his gaze scanning the field in front of him, he saw Isabel, kneeling beside Magnus on the stony ground. It felt like there was no air in his lungs. He had never seen Magnus so pale or so still. There was blood on his leather armor and blood on the ground beneath him. But it was impossible. Magnus had lived so long. He was permanent, a fixture. In no world Alec's imagination could conjure did Magnus die before he did. Alec! It was Izzy's voice, swimming up toward him as if through water. Alec! He's breathing. Alec let his own breath out in a shaking gasp. He held a hand out to his sister. Dagger. She handed him one silently. She had never paid as much attention as he had in field first aid classes. She had always said runes would do the job. He slit open the front of Magnus's leather armor and then the shirt beneath it. His teeth gritted. It could be that the armor was all that was holding him together. He peeled back the sides gingerly, surprised at the steadiness of his own hands. There was a good deal of blood and a wide stab wound under the right side of Magnus's ribs, but from the rhythm of Magnus's breathing, it was clear his lungs hadn't been punctured. Alec yanked off his jacket, wadded it up, and pressed it against the still bleeding wound. Magnus's eyes fluttered open. "Ouch," he said feebly. "Quit leaning on me." "Raziel," Alec breathed thankfully. "You're all right." He slipped his free hand under Magnus's head, his thumb stroking Magnus's bloody cheek. "I thought..." He looked up to glance at his sister before he said anything too embarrassing, but she had slipped quietly away. "I saw you fall," Alec said quietly. He bent down and kissed Magnus lightly on the mouth, not wanting to hurt him. "I thought you were dead." Magnus smiled crookedly. "What, from that scratch?" He glanced down at the reddening jacket in Alec's hand. "Okay, a deep scratch. Like from a really, really big cat." "Are you delirious?" Alec said. "No." Magnus's eyebrows drew together. Amadis was aiming for my heart, but she didn't get anything vital. The problem is that the blood loss is sapping my energy and my ability to heal myself. He took a deep breath that ended in a cough. "Here, give me your hand." He raised his hand, and Alec twined their fingers together, Magnus's palm hard against his. "Do you remember the night of the battle on Valentine's ship, when I needed some of your strength?" "Do you need it again now?" Alec said. "Because you can have it." "I always need your strength, Alec," Magnus said, and closed his eyes as their intertwined fingers began to shine, as if between them they held the light of a star. Fire exploded up through the hilt of the angel sword and along the blade. The flame shot through Clary's arm like a bolt of electricity, knocking her to the ground. Heat lightning sizzled up and down her veins, and she curled up in agony, clutching herself as if she could keep her body from blowing to pieces. Jace fell to his knees. The sword still pierced him, but it was burning now with a white gold flame, and the fire was filling his body like colored water filling a clear glass pitcher. Golden flame shot through him, turning his skin translucent. His hair was bronze, his bones were hard, shining tender visible through his skin. Glorious itself was burning away, dissolving in liquid drops like gold melting in a crucible. Jace's head was thrown back, his body arched like a bow, as the conflagration raged through him. Clary tried to pull herself toward him across the rocky ground, but the heat radiating from his body was too much. His hands clutched at his chest, and a river of golden blood slipped through his fingers. The stone on which he knelt was blackening, cracking, turning to ash. And then, Glorious burned up like the last of a bonfire in a shower of sparks, and Jace collapsed forward onto the stones. Clary tried to stand, but her legs buckled under her. Her veins still felt as if fire were shooting through them, and pain was darting across the surface of her skin like the touch of hot pokers. She pulled herself forward, bloodying her fingers, hearing her ceremonial dress rip until she reached Jace. He was lying on his side with his head pillowed on one arm, the other arm flung out wide. She crumpled beside him. Heat radiated from his body as if he were a dying bed of coals, but she didn't care. She could see the rip in the back of his gear where Glorious had torn through it. There were ashes from the burned rocks mixed in with the gold of his hair and blood. Moving slowly, every movement hurting as if she were old, as if she had aged a year for every second Jace had burned, she pulled him toward her, so he was on his back on the blood-stained and blackened stone. She looked at his face, no longer gold, but still, and still beautiful. Clary laid her hand against his chest, where the red of his blood stood out against the darker red of his gear. She had felt the edges of the blade grind against the bones of his ribs. She had seen his blood spill through his fingers, so much blood that it had stained the rocks beneath him black and had stiffened the edges of his hair. And yet, not if he's more heaven's than hell's. "Jace," she whispered. All around them were running feet. The shattered remains of Sebastian's small army was fleeing across the Burren, dropping their weapons as they went. She ignored them. "Jace." He didn't move. His face was still, peaceful under the moonlight. His eyelashes threw dark, spidering shadows against the tops of his cheekbones. "Please," she said, and her voice felt as if it were scraping out of her throat. When she breathed, her lungs burned. "Look at me." Clary closed her eyes. When she opened them again, her mother was kneeling down beside her, touching her shoulder. Tears were running down Jocelyn's face. But that couldn't be. Why would her mother be crying? "Clary," her mother whispered, "let him go. He's dead." In the distance, Clary saw Alec kneeling beside Magnus. "No," Clary said. "The sword, it burns away what's evil. He could still live." Her mother ran a hand down her back, her fingers tangling in Clary's filthy curls. "Clary, no." "Jace," Clary thought fiercely, her hands curling around his arms. "You're stronger than this. If this is you, really you, you'll open your eyes and look at me." Suddenly, Simon was there, kneeling on the other side of Jace. His face was smeared with blood and grime. He reached for Clary. She whipped her head up to glare at him and her mother, and she saw Isabel coming up behind them, her eyes wide, moving slowly. The front of her gear was stained with blood. Unable to face Izzy, Clary turned away, her eyes on the gold of Jace's hair. "Sebastian," Clary said, or tried to say. Her voice came out as a croak. "Someone should go after him. And leave me alone." "They're looking for him now." Her mother leaned in, anxious, her eyes wide. "Clary, let him go. Clary, baby, let her be," Clary heard Isabel say sharply. She heard her mother's protest, but everything they were doing seemed to be going on at a great distance, as if Clary were watching a play from the last row. Nothing mattered but Jace. Jace, burning. Tears scalded the backs of her eyes.
Jace, goddammit, she said, her voice ragged. You are not dead!
Clary, Simon said gently. It was a chance. Come away from him. That was what Simon was asking. But she couldn't. She wouldn't. Jace, she whispered. It was like a mantra, the way he had once held her at Renwick's and chanted her name over and over.
Jace Lightwood!
She froze. There. A movement so tiny it was hardly a movement at all. The flutter of an eyelash. She leaned forward, almost overbalancing, and pressed her hand against the torn scarlet material over his chest, as if she could heal the wound she had made. She felt instead so wonderful that for a moment it made no sense to her. Could not possibly be, under her fingertips, the rhythm of his heart. Epilogue. At first, Jace was conscious of nothing. Then there was a darkness, and within the darkness, a burning pain. It was as if he'd swallowed fire, and it choked him and burned his throat. He gasped desperately for air, for a breath that would cool the fire, and his eyes flew open. He saw darkness and shadows. A dimly lit room, known and unknown, with rows of beds and a window letting in hollow blue light. And he was in one of the beds, blankets and sheets pulled down and tangled around his body like ropes. His chest hurt as if a dead weight lay on it, and his hands scrabbled to find what it was, encountering only a thick bandage wrapped around his bare skin. He gasped again, another cooling breath. Jace? The voice was familiar to him as his own, and then there was a hand gripping his, fingers interlacing with his own. With a reflex born out of years of love and familiarity, he gripped back. Alec, he said, and he was almost shocked at the sound of his own voice in his ears. It hadn't changed. He felt as if he had been scorched, melted, and recreated like gold in a crucible. But his what? Could he really be himself again? He looked up at Alec's anxious blue eyes and knew where he was. The infirmary at the Institute. Home. I'm sorry. A slim, calloused hand stroked his cheek, and a second familiar voice said, "Don't apologize. You have nothing to apologize for." He half closed his eyes. The weight on his chest was still there, half a wound and half guilt. Izzy. Her breath caught. It really is you, right? Isabel, Alec began, as if to warn her not to upset Jace. But Jace touched her hand. He could see Izzy's dark eyes shining in the dawn light, her face full of hopeful expectancy. This was the Izzy only her family knew, loving and worried. It's me, he said, and cleared his throat. I could understand if you didn't believe me, but I swear on the angel is. It's me. Alec said nothing, but his grip on Jace's hand tightened. You don't need to swear, he said, and with his free hand touched the parabatai rune near his collarbone. I know. I can feel it. I don't feel like I'm missing a part of me anymore. I felt it too. Jace took a ragged breath. Something missing. I felt it, even with Sebastian. But I didn't know what it was I was missing. But it was you, my parabatai. He looked at Izzy, and you, my sister, and... His eyelids burned suddenly with a scorching light. The wound on his chest throbbed, and he saw her face, lit by the blaze of the sword. A strange burning spread through his veins like white fire. Clary, Please tell me. She's completely all right, Isabel said hastily. There was something else in her voice. Surprise. Unease. You swear. You're not just telling me that because you don't want to upset me. She stabbed you, Isabel pointed out. Jace gave a strangled laugh. It hurt. She saved me. She did, Alec agreed. When can I see her? Jace tried not to sound too eager. It really is you, Isabel said, her voice amused. The Silent Brothers have been in and out, checking on you, said Alec. On this. He touched the bandage on Jace's chest. And to see if you were awake yet. When they find out you are, they'll probably want to talk to you before they let you see Clary. How long have I been out cold? About 2 days, said Alec. Since we got you back from the Burren, and we're pretty sure you weren't going to die. Turns out it's not that easy to completely heal a wound made by an archangel's blade. So what you're saying is that I'm going to have a scar. A big, ugly one, said Isabel, right across your chest. Well, damn, said Jace. And I was relying on that money from the topless underwear modeling gig I had lined up, too. He spoke wryly, but he was thinking that it was right, somehow, that he have a scar, that he should be marked by what had happened to him, physically as well as mentally. He had almost lost his soul, and the scar would serve to remind him of the fragility of will, and the difficulty of goodness, and of darker things, of what lay ahead, and what he could not allow to happen. His strength was returning, he could feel it, and he would bend all of it against Sebastian. Knowing that, he felt suddenly lighter, a little of the weight gone from his chest. He turned his head, enough to look into Alec's eyes. I never thought I'd fight on the opposite side of a battle from you, he said hoarsely. Never. And you never will again, Alec said, his jaw set. Jace, Isabel said. Try to stay calm, all right? It's just... Now what? Is something else wrong? Well, you're glowing a bit, Isabel said. I mean, just a smidge of the glowing. Glowing? Alec raised the hand that held Jace's. Jace could see, in the darkness, a faint shimmer across his forearm that seemed to trace the lines of his veins like a map. We think it's a leftover effect from the Archangel sword, he said. It'll probably fade soon, but the Silent Brothers are curious, of course. Jace sighed and let his head fall back against the pillow. He was too exhausted to muster up much interest in his new, illuminated state. Does that mean you have to go? He asked. Do you have to get the brothers? They instructed us to get them when you woke, said Alec. But he was shaking his head, even as he spoke. But not if you don't want us to. I feel tired, Jace confessed. If I could sleep a few more hours. Of course you can. Isabel's fingers pushed his hair back, out of his eyes. Her tone was firm, absolute, fierce as a mother bear protecting her cub. Jace's eyes began to close. And you won't leave me? No, Alec said. No, we won't ever leave you. You know that. Never. Isabel took his hand, the one Alec wasn't holding, and pressed it fiercely. Lightwoods, all together, she whispered. Jace's hand was suddenly damp where she was holding it, and he realized she was crying, her tears splashing down, crying for him because she loved him. Even after everything that had happened, she still loved him. They both did. He fell asleep like that, with Isabel on one side of him and Alec on the other, as the sun came up with the dawn. What do you mean I still can't see him? Demanded Clary. She was sitting on the edge of the couch in Luke's living room, The cord of the phone wrapped so tightly around her fingers, the tips had turned white.
"It's been only 3 days, and he was unconscious for 2 of them," said Isabel.
There were voices behind her, and Clary strained her ears to hear who was talking. She thought she could pick out Maris's voice. But was she talking to Jace? Alec?
The Silent Brothers are still examining him. They still say no visitors.
Screw the Silent Brothers.
No thanks. They're strong and silent. And then there's just Freaky.
Isabel!
Clary sat back against the squashy pillows. It was a bright fall day, and sunlight streamed in through the living room windows, though it did nothing to lighten her mood.
I just want to know that he's all right, that he isn't injured permanently, and he hasn't swollen up like a melon.
Of course he hasn't swollen up like a melon. Don't be ridiculous.
I wouldn't know because no one will tell me anything.
He's all right, Isabel said, though there was something in her voice that told Clary she was holding something back.
Alec's been sleeping in the bed next to his, and Mom and I have been taking turns staying up with him all day. The Silent Brothers haven't been torturing him. They just need to know what he knows, about Sebastian, the apartment, everything.
But I can't believe Jace wouldn't call me if he could. Not unless this is because he doesn't want to see me.
Maybe he doesn't, Isabel said. It could have been that whole thing where you stabbed him.
Isabel!
I was just kidding, believe it or not.
Name of the angel, Clary. Can't you show some patience?
Isabel sighed.
Never mind. I forgot who I was talking to.
Look, Jay said, not that I'm supposed to repeat this, mind you, that he needed to talk to you in person. If you could just wait.
That's all I've been doing, Clary said. Waiting.
It was true. She'd spent the past 2 nights lying in her room at Luke's house, waiting for news about Jace, and reliving the last week of her life over and over in excruciating detail. The wild hunt, the antique store in Prague, fountains full of blood, the tunnels of Sebastian's eyes, Jace's body against hers, Sebastian jamming the infernal cup against her lips, trying to pry them apart, the bitter stench of demon ichor, Glorious blazing up her arm, spearing through Jace like a bolt of fire, the beat of his heart under her fingertips. He hadn't even opened his eyes, but Clary had screamed that he was alive, that his heart was beating, and his family had descended on them, even Alec, half holding up an exceptionally pale Magnus.
All I do is go around and around inside my own head. It's making me crazy.
And that's where we're in agreement.
You know what, Clary?
What?
There was a pause.
You don't need my permission to come here and see Jace, Isabel said. You don't need anyone's permission to do anything.
You're Clary Frey. You go charging into every situation without knowing how the hell it's going to turn out, and then you get through it on sheer guts and craziness.
Not where my personal life is concerned, Iz.
Huh, said Isabel.
Well, maybe you should.
And she put the phone down.
Clary stared at her receiver, hearing the distant tinny buzz of the dial tone. Then, with a sigh, she hung up and headed into her bedroom. Simon was sprawled on the bed, his feet on her pillows, his chin propped on his hands. His laptop was propped open at the foot of the bed, frozen on a scene from The Matrix. He looked up as she came in.
Any luck?
Not exactly.
Clary went over to her closet. She'd already dressed for the possibility that she might see Jace today, in jeans and a soft blue sweater she knew he liked.
She pulled a corduroy jacket on and sat down on the bed beside Simon, sliding her feet into boots.
Isabel won't tell me anything. The Silent Brothers don't want Jace to have visitors, but whatever. I'm going over anyway.
Simon closed the laptop and rolled over onto his back.
That's my brave little stalker.
Shut up, she said.
Do you want to come with me?
See Isabel?
I'm meeting Becky, he said, at the apartment.
Good. Give her my love. She finished lacing her boots and reached forward to brush Simon's hair away from his forehead. "First I had to get used to you with that mark on you. Now I have to get used to you without it." His dark brown eyes traced her face. "With or without it, I'm still just me."
"Simon, do you remember what was written on the blade of the sword? Of Glorious?
Quis ut Deus?"
"It's Latin," she said. "I looked it up. It means, who is like God?" "It's a trick question. The answer is no one. No one is like God. Don't you see?" He looked at her.
"See what?"
"You said it. Deus. God." Simon opened his mouth and then closed it again.
I know Camille told you that she could say God's name because she didn't believe in God, but I think it has to do with what you believe about yourself. If you believe you're damned, then you are. But if you don't..."
She touched his hand. He squeezed her fingers briefly and released them, his face troubled.
"I need some time to think about this." "Whatever you need, but I'm here if you need to talk."
"And I'm here if you do. Whatever happens with you and Jace at the Institute, you know you can always come over to my place if you want to talk."
"How's Jordan?"
"Pretty good," said Simon. "He and Maya are definitely together now. They're in that ooky stage where I feel like I should be giving them space all the time." He crinkled up his nose. "When she's not there, he frets about how he feels insecure because she's dated a bunch of dudes and he spent the past 3 years doing military-style training for the Praetor and pretending he was asexual."
"Oh, come on. I doubt she cares about that."
"You know, men, we have delicate egos."
"I wouldn't describe Jace's ego as delicate."
"No, Jace is sort of the anti-aircraft artillery tank of male egos," Simon admitted. He was lying with his right hand splayed across his stomach, and the gold fairy ring glittered on his finger. Since the other had been destroyed, it no longer seemed to have any powers, but Simon wore it anyway. Impulsively, Clary bent down and kissed his forehead.
"You're the best friend anyone could ever have. You know that?" she said.
"I did know that, but it's always nice to hear it again." Clary laughed and stood up. "Well, we might as well walk to the subway together, unless you want to hang around here with the rents instead of your cool downtown bachelor pad."
"Right, with my lovelorn roommate and my sister."
He slid off the bed and followed her as she walked out into the living room.
"You're not just going to Portal?"
She shrugged.
"I don't know. It seems wasteful."
She crossed the hall and, after knocking quickly, stuck her head into the master bedroom.
"Luke?
Come on in."
She went in, Simon beside her. Luke was sitting up in bed. The bulk of the bandage that wrapped his chest was visible as an outline beneath his flannel shirt. There was a stack of magazines on the bed in front of him. Simon picked one up.
"Sparkle Like an Ice Princess, The Winter Bride," he read out loud.
"I don't know, man. I'm not sure a tiara of snowflakes would be the best look for you."
Luke glanced around the bed and sighed.
"Jocelyn thought wedding planning might be good for us. Return to normalcy and all that."
There were shadows under his blue eyes. Jocelyn had been the one to break the news to him about Amadeus while he was still at the police station. Though Clary had greeted him with hugs when he'd come home, he hadn't mentioned his sister once, and neither had she.
"If it was up to me, I would elope to Vegas and have a $50 pirate-themed wedding with Elvis presiding."
"I could be the Wench of Honor," Clary suggested. She looked at Simon expectantly.
"And you could be..."
"Oh, no," he said. "I am a hipster. I am too cool for themed weddings."
"You play D&D. You're a geek," she corrected him fondly.
"Geek is chic," Simon declared. "Ladies love nerds." Luke cleared his throat.
"I assume you came here to tell me something?"
"I'm heading over to the Institute to see Jace," Clary said.
"Do you want me to bring you anything back?"
He shook his head.
Your mother's at the store, stocking up. He leaned over to ruffle her hair and winced. He was healing, but slowly. Have fun. Clary thought of what she was probably facing at the Institute. An angry Maris, a wearied Isabel, an absent Alec, and a Jace who didn't want to see her.